Good evening, everyone, and welcome to this Dance Dialogues conversation between Joe Lloyd and Rebecca Jensen. I'd like to begin by acknowledging that I'm joining today's talk from the unceded lands of the Wurundjeri people of the Eastern Kulin Nation, and I want to pay my respects to their elders past, present, and emerging. I wish to extend this respect to any First Nations people joining us today. We're delighted to welcome Joe and Rebecca in a conversation exploring what practice is now. Before I hand over to them, some brief reintroductions. Joe Lloyd is an influential Melbourne dance artist working with choreography as a social encounter, revealing behaviour over particular durations and circumstances. A VCA graduate, Joe has presented work in Japan, Hong Kong, Dance Massive, Melbourne Festival, For Chunky Move through Next Move in 2016, Live Works, and Mona Foma. Joe has worked with choreographers Gideon Obazenik, Shelley Lassiker, and Sandra Parker. In 2016, Joe was the resident director of Lucy Gerenink, and in 2018, she received an Australia Council fellowship. Joe is a resident artist at the substation. Welcome, Joe. Rebecca Jensen is a dancer, choreographer, and teacher, born in Aotearoa and based in Naarm, Melbourne. Her work leaks into the spaces between disciplines, defined by the specificity of dancerly thinking, live, complex, change-orientated, contradictory, and non-linear. Notable works include Deep Sea Dances in 2017, Explorer in 2016, and Sinkhole with Jess Gall and Irini Bing, which is ongoing. With Sarah Aiken, Rebecca has created What Am I Supposed to Do in 2019, Overworld in 2014, and Underworld in 2017, as well as ongoing participatory project Deep Soulful Sweats. Beck has a performance history with a range of artists, including Joe Lloyd since 2010, and recently Lucy Gerenink. Rebecca was a recipient of the Dance Web Scholarship in 2015, was artist in residence at Temperance Hall in 2018, and she will be artist in residence at Cité Internationale des Arts in Paris, supported by the Australia Council in 2021. Welcome, Beck. And without further ado, over to you, Jo.
Thanks, Tom. You're all good. So my visual description, I'm a white female in my 40s. I have orange hair just past the shoulder. I'm in a black dress with a white background. Beck, did you want to do your visual description to start us off?
Hi, everyone. I am Rebecca. I am a white cis woman in my early 30s, sitting in a black jumper in front of a black background. I have blonde-ish, once blonde hair that's pulled back tightly and gold earrings. Never done that before.
No, neither have I. So I guess, you know, Tom did this lovely intro, thanks Tom, and did our bios, and listening to the bios, it's quite overwhelming and lovely, but at the same time so much gets left out. And so Beck, you know, in the lead up to this, we were talking about sort of how our bios cross over. So I guess the first thing I think of is Luke George said, oh, there's this dancer that might, you know, be of interest, or, you know, she might be someone you'd want to invite into the process, because I was working with Luke at the time and it was you. And so that was where it started in 2010 when I first sort of came across you dancing and you came into the studio.
Yeah, I remember that moment. I remember going to your class at Chunky Move, having seen your work before that moment as well. So yeah, having an idea of your like kind of idiosyncratic and also like highly virtuosic movement language, I guess. And yeah, that was a while ago. And since then, now I have danced with you, for you in many works. I don't know. I mean, many,
yeah.
many, many works and many things that also ended up not being shows in the end, perhaps. And also you've come into my process more recently in a work for a large group of dancers, deep sea dancers. Mm-hmm. And then also perhaps another kind of crisscross in our like entanglement. I feel like we are entangled. Would be maybe teaching as well, sort of teaching the same people in different classes. Through Chunky Move, Lucy Guerin Inc., and even VCA a little bit.
Yeah, and I guess coming into this, we sat down and sort of, in some ways prepared, but it felt like it was unfamiliar and familiar to sit down and have time to talk, because in some ways we prepare together for performance, whether it's, you know, in the context of me directing or bringing a performance to life or programming something or being programmed, or in your work, or in the transition between you teaching and me teaching, or there's lots of in-between conversations. But really, until we sat down yesterday, it almost felt like we never really sat down to talk, which is extraordinary. I mean, but we talk a lot, you know, in process, in studio, and about works that we see and about things that we digest, you know, others' conversations, books that we lend each other. But in yesterday's chat, I think the first thing I wanted to ask, or that I just thought I would ask, is how do you work? Because I was thinking, I've been in deep sea dances, that work of yours, and seen your works, but that was my first thing of how do you work? And then then we went on to talk about like how does one work? And I don't know, maybe that's a good way to get rolling. Because it keeps changing, doesn't it? I mean, I think in some ways you and I both like, maybe, I'm presuming, but I think we have that in common, and other dance artists around us in Melbourne that we know of, you know, we tend to want to or have a desire to keep embellishing and changing our process or our practice. I don't know, there's something about always, exiting and entering.
Always creating openings in order to sustain something, or creating change in order to sustain something. Mm. When you asked me that yesterday, how do I work, I kind of freaked out, because I feel like in many ways I'm spread across quite a few ways of working, which is something I find super exciting. And maybe it's also connected to this idea of practice and what that might be and how do we define that. And this has been a kind of conversation recently. I was actually in a chat with some younger artists, and someone asked, like, what is this word practice? Like, why, what is it? How do I get one? Like, what, why do I need to have one? And a few of us who were a bit older in the chat, like, we realized, oh, this word actually only came about fairly recently. It wasn't something that was bothering me when I was fresh out of uni. This whole thing about defining the way you work. I don't know if I have a resistance to it, or if I don't want to kind of like set something in stone through defining it. But I think I do work in so many different ways. Like, one huge part of my practice is working collaboratively with Sarah, and I could identify some kind of key things that we revisit as a duo. I mean, maybe that's a good way to define, like, what do you keep revisiting, or like, what can you not stop doing?
Yeah, and just your uncomfortability, you know, like, do you think that's because, you know, that that irritates something about it being stagnant, or if you define it, and you know, or is that just how I relate to that?
Well, I think in ways it's also a translation. Like, I think, yeah, you kind of work how you work, and sometimes that's very, that forms a logic that's really specific to what's happening in the room and who's in the room and what the project is and what the context is and, you know, where the show will be and all of this. And yeah, there's a kind of an assumption. I was talking to a friend, Annabelle, about this morning briefly, but just an assumption that we should be able to translate that into language and something, yeah, defined or easy to talk about.
Mm.
Not necessarily easy, that's not really the right word.
Mm. And I think the thing of, you know, even, you know, you bringing up the term practice, like, you know, a decade or two back, process was something that was used a lot, and I was asked about what's your process, and, you know, I hope that my process keeps changing, but I think it also the thing of the use of words, and I find the use of words in the process or in the studio working time quite a delicate kind of area, because language is so huge, and I think choosing certain words has always been important, so that I try to kind of I value the transmission and the use of the body, and also how important the use of the words is, including that in the practice, like how the body can transfer, or how can I invite others in to what I'm doing and what I'm stimulated by. Like I'm constantly trying to see what resonates, and you know that. But then what's fascinating, I think, is those moments that I gain an understanding of what it's like to be in the room while I'm trying to transmit these ideas. And for someone like you to be there, and often you'll bring up a question and then I'll shift my perspective. And so how that contributes to that transmission. So I'll understand, oh, the perspective from Beck in the room is this, and then, oh, how am I gonna work because of that? Like, I think that's something that's quite delicate and of real importance in the working in the room. And I think also being, yeah, I think we talked a little bit about translation, you know, like, and how somebody understands, and I guess maybe interpreting it, how someone interprets that. And then you went on to something interesting to do with your understanding of interpretation, Beck.
Yeah, I guess thinking, yeah, it's interesting to be doing this talk with you, Joe, as because I have been in this position as a dancer in your work for so many years now. And yeah, like you're saying, like that us sitting down to actually talk about work outside of the context of the studio where we're maybe working on something that's yours. I'm being really hesitant to call things like yours, mine. I'm a dancer, you're the choreographer. And I think in so many ways those words are really they could do with a bit of a question or a rejig, and it's a conversation that constantly comes up often as well, like dancers are collaborating dances, or yeah, like what I guess also that goes into conversations around authorship, which maybe we can talk to a bit later, because I think that's a super interesting thing in your process. Mm-hmm. And I can probably speak about it in relation to mine too. But yeah, I was thinking about how in France or in French, I also spent some time with some French Canadians, they use the word interpret to describe the role of a dancer. And I said this in the studio the other day, and it was funny because Joe and I actually interpreted what that would mean differently. I sort of took on interpret as like, oh, so it's like the translator, like I'm in a way, like maybe I'm this kind of conduit for like Joe's thinking, Joe's logics through my body, through my sensibility, as like an interface with the audience. And then Joe kind of understood it as this, I have an interpretation. It's not necessarily the same as the way she's thinking, or it's not, maybe it doesn't even matter if the two things are actually quite different. Joe says something and I do what I think that thing is, which also seems to, you seem to like this space in terms of how you deliver information. But it was funny how we interpret them differently.
Yeah, while we were talking about interpreting things. And then that thing of suspending the understanding, so there's these gaps for your involvement, and which comes back again to the kind of onus put on the dancer in the role of the person, you know, initiating the project, or, you know, the practicing of the project or the developing of the choreography. You know, it's like that thing of, you know, you are the work, you know, we are the work, all of us, but then at the same time, you know, it wasn't your desire to make that work. So there's that balance of me abandoning a sense of responsibility to allow you or the others that are involved to be contributing and be the work, but then at the same time going, well, no, actually take on the responsibility. I think it's pretty fascinating. And there's a play with there's a big play going on. And I think it's sometimes been quite difficult for me as a collaborator for others, and learning about what that is for people then in my work to be contributing. And it's an ongoing learning of how to respect that and work with that so that everybody is working well, you know. But I think it's, above all, it's pretty exciting when it's, you know, for me to take the perspective that we're kind of all having opportunities to keep increasing range in which ways we're working. Like, it's like bettering the form, you know, like Terry O'Connor said once, you know, like, what else can this form do? You know, and it's like we're all trying to keep finding ways to set up, to work, to put out their share. And I think that's what's interesting. I like coming back to that idea that we're all in support of the form somehow. Like in the end.
Yeah, when you were saying that, a quote just came to my head, and it's a bit of a vague recall of a quote, and I think maybe Boyana Kunst said it, but I actually can't quite remember. But something about, I guess the form and dance, and how dance is like equally like a speculative machine, and it's also like a practical force. Yeah, I don't know. It's maybe a bit of a segue into a new kind of topic.
Yes.
But I was also thinking about, being in the room, being in these spaces which seem to open up in dance context, where that there is this space for like a, you actually have terminology for this, Joe, that you use quite often, and I'll just steal it, but like a shared fiction to emerge, like a space where these two kind of openings meet. Do you want to talk about fictions a little more?
Yeah. I mean, even that you phrase it like stealing it. Well, that was something that Annie Mokoto, you know, as a dramaturg in the development of a work, observed and wrote in her notes, this thing of shared fictions. And I, you know, I sort of then took that as a framing. And I think it's an ongoing, I don't know which way you wanted to go from that, Beck, but I was thinking of it as
really.
pushing the real and the imagined, you know, like I think pushing the real and the imagined is always there. Often I think I'm working in paradoxes, not to simplify or anything, but it's becoming more obvious that this thing of like the real flesh, the real body, the real us in space, and then the imagined, and how that can amplify, and how far away they are from one another, or you know, the often I talk about the dance on behalf of another, or this idea of a conduit. Even when you talked before, Beck, of your like perhaps a moment of being a conduit for the translation into you, into the audience, you know, what I'm trying to achieve or something. But that thing of being the conduit as the physical conduit of ancestry or, this dance on behalf of somebody, like, and in some cases to be clearer, so I'm not so ambiguous about it, but, you know, I've looked at certain people in history and then we do the dance on behalf of them, or I do it on behalf of them and then transmit it to you, or, you know, in some ways there's always this passing through bodies, but then what those bodies are stimulated by in themselves and allowing for that. I think there's something we were talking about before, Beck, of how care can be taken for what comes into the room, not just physically, but the behavior, like where do you sort of decide what is omitted to find the practices, or find the propositions for practice, or from idea to action, what are you going to omit in order to refine what that is, and to make that like I'm often talking about an anchor, or you know. And so then I think in terms of your working, you know, you often have these large scale works, collaborative works, and you're managing the engagement of many things. And so then when it comes to your practice, when you're not so much in relation to others, it's like what gets omitted, and then what that allows for. And I don't know, I think that something you said first up in this conversation to do with it's more to do with like in terms of how you work, how do you want to work, like, or what are you still holding on to? You were talking about that, I think, how you worded it, like what can't you not do? Or, you know, it's like, I can't leave that alone until I've solved it, like choreographic solutions. You know me, I'm always trying to kind of take something that's like a junk idea, and then I see value in it, but I have to keep working on it to find some solution to go on with it. It's almost like just thinking about how you go about like, do you create problems in some ways, or like I think there's this practice you have that I did in that a lot of us did in the shared time accumulation, is that the right wording? Shared time
accumulation. Yeah, it was one of the kind of sections of deep sea dances.
And you know, that fascinated me to the point where, you know, I remember being in a studio in a workshop situation. I wanted them to have a go at it, and it was like, no, that's specs. I'm not going to do that. Like, I respect that. And I think it was because I couldn't solve it. And it was, I'm often interested in that. And I think, I don't know, I just wondered if you wanted to talk about that a bit, about either that little practice as a EG of the way you sometimes go about things, because you did talk about that work you made at Temperance Hall earlier, which was fascinating, and you were sort of deciding to deliberately not do certain things that you were noticing you were doing in other people's work, in your own work, and you were, yeah, maybe I found that pretty interesting, the kind of omitting practices to generate the practicing.
Mm-hmm. Well, you just said so many things.
Sorry.
No, that's fine. There was something I wanted to say quickly just about like, yeah, we have all these crossovers, but I think it's also like, yeah, I mean, maybe the interpret example kind of reveals also like our differences. And yeah, this idea that we're like dancing on behalf of someone, or like we're a conduit. Like, I mean, you know, I'm always in rehearsal. I'm like, but what, like, but how is this happening? Like, what is this happening? Like, what is this? What do I have to believe in to go there? And like, yeah, I think that there's this kind of like, I don't know how to describe it, but I feel like it's a really big difference between the way we think about things and the way we work. And to be really reductive, like I would say, like I feel as though I'm very sort of like, okay, external, like outside in, and feel like you're very like inside out. And like, sorry, you're like cringing. Ooh.
No, I'm not. Yeah. I'm excited.
Okay. All right. And like, yeah, thinking about that kind of, yeah, that trust. The situations that you set up like that require such a trust in the material that arrives, like from these kind of, sometimes the sources feels ambiguous, or it feels like, yeah, maybe I was a conduit for like something. Like this other thing that was in the room that I didn't know about, or maybe I just did something, you know. And it's kind of like this, there's this slipperiness between like, who's me, where's the dance, what's you, like, what am I doing? Am I doing Joe because I'm next to Joe? Like, am I moving in this way because I'm next to you? And I think that that's a super interesting conversation. Or I'm next to Sian, or I'm next to Deanne or Sheridan. Or yeah, is it coming out of these? I don't know. There's such a slipperiness in the room with you, mm-hmm. and a blurriness that you really encourage as well. And it's something that leans into like this kind of emotive space, like, and even to the way movement can be sort of described, named or not named. Like there's an allowance for things to kind of like rise to the surface, and almost catharsis or kind of like chaos. And I feel like in a way, like I'm almost, yeah, I feel quite separate from that in a way. But then it's like, I guess this is the amazing thing about being an interpret. I'm just going to use that word. Working with others is like that, yeah, that you can really enter that space wholeheartedly, and it's like, I think you create a really generous environment for people to contribute, but at the same time that can be also like really demanding. Yeah, that's something I wanted to respond, but I also have more things to respond to other things, but we can do a little back and forth.
Yeah. I mean, it's great because what you just sort of like elaborated on made me think I was interested in the shared time accumulation and your practicing and your omitting of these sorts of practices that are, you know, we're really different. And then I was thinking, oh, I love shared time accumulation because I got confused and I had to work it out, and I had to cope, and I had to manage it non-verbally. I had to negotiate with others. And I think that's what I thrive on. Like I love that. And in performance, I think I'm trying to work out why I like to set up performances that are paradoxical, that they're that, and then they're both really strict and formed. And and I think it is very generous of everyone involved, but then I think it's also like, I think I'm not deliberately trying to be generous. I'm just going, it's like I always talk about, like, it's like a meal I've cooked and I've wanted to share it. It's like, wow, amazing, taste this. And when someone doesn't want to have it, you're like, no, you've got to try it. But I think most of the time you all go, okay, I'll try it. And that's, I think, a really, you know, hope, and I don't think it is an ego-driven place, but I think I just thrive on it and get excited by it. It's like, you know, and then I get excited for others to be in that place, because I think if I don't understand it yet, and I'm in that kind of slightly terrified place in performance with the audience, we're all there, then it's kind of where it should be, because we're all working it out. Like, because even recently thinking, if it's too descriptive, what the vocabulary is, if we can name it, is that a problem? You know, like, it's a very fine line, I think, or not a fine line, it's just a very slippery place of, like, you don't completely do whatever. It's very framed. And
that framing sometimes even, like, yeah, the way that's formed is sometimes it doesn't even need to be spoken about. Like, it forms. Like, you're very aware of it. I'm not saying you don't know what you're doing, but, like, sometimes, or maybe sometimes you don't. Yeah, of course. I mean, that's also great. But, like, yeah, I don't know. I feel like it. Yeah, I guess in a way, like, that it's like a kind of I'm gonna change.
Were you gonna go into psychology?
I was just gonna analyze you, Joe. No, I was gonna mention what shared time accumulation actually was, because it's just this name at the moment. That actually, yeah, Deep Sea Dancers was a group piece. Basically within it, a kind of phrase was created, and then it disintegrated across the whole work. That's a very basic trajectory of the work. But the shared time accumulation was a group score in which everybody is quite heavily reliant on each person. And so there were 16 people, and you're basically sort of taking a form from someone that you see, replicating that form, like a physical form, imagining what they will do next, and then doing that. At the same time, there's this sort of accumulating back and forward happening. So you're constantly in this, the accumulating back and forward is happening, isn't we go forward, someone says stop, you start from the beginning again, and you move to that point and beyond that point. So you're accumulating like a long kind of winding pathway of choreography that is interdependent within the group. People cue each other, the timing becomes important. You get sort of, you start to kind of drown in trying to remember the specificity of each of the connections you make and the steps you're doing. And yeah, I guess it had a precarity in it, which I am also really excited about. I'm excited about being in that space where the responsibility is very shared and the situation is precarious. And perhaps there's also the opportunity for someone to destabilize that if they want to. And that can be a great thing. Like that's sort of welcome or invited. I mean, that was a big part in that piece, which I also think speaks to some logic in your working. Whether it's in like a class context or in a piece like Overture.
Yeah. Well, I had a thought back there, but it's gone now.
I had a thought, I think also aware of time, but I had a thought just about naming things and not naming things. And it's something you talk about a lot, and it's also something I think about a lot. And it's also something I've found, like a lot of these practices, or maybe we could call them agendas, another word you use a lot, that sort of come through in your works. It's hard for me to not take it with me when I go other places. And I guess also this is related to that. You mentioned like emitting information when you enter different spaces. And I feel like I do work across a lot of places with different people, and I really consciously try to like not take something into the room that's from another place. But this, yeah, naming and not naming, that's something that I've become super, super interested in. So I don't know, for people that aren't dancers, like naming movement, you know, you throw your hands in the air, you pull your elbows in. But if you just do that action, you don't have the reference points. You don't give it the rhythm that matches the words. The movement can kind of exist as this thing unto itself. And yeah, I mean, I think that's like so exciting. Like dance nerd, like super exciting. It's so, yeah, we name everything when we do it. We name everything. It's also like really territorial and colonial, perhaps you could say, to sort of, yeah, name everything you do. I don't know.
Yeah, and that thing of I tried to, you know, be more formal with investigating a notation over the last few years, and then I thought, oh, maybe I've already got a notation, and then I was like, oh no, for me it's an ongoing notation. And then yeah, it's and then how
you mean, do you mean a notation as in like notating verbally, or notating like writing stuff down, or like a consistency, like calling something and then it's always that thing? Or
yeah, both the verbal and then the written. So, and I guess it could also be a way people work when they use the term score, you know, or scores. And I've not used that, and I don't do it, you know, I don't use the word scores, but it's not like a snobbery or anything. It's actually more respect for something I don't think I have a real clear history with. It's like using the word improvisation is fine, but it's also like it's of a time. And so I think I was trying to escape my own time of, you know, I improvised, you know, but now it's like I try to refine what I'm actually doing, and that word I don't include as much because it's not as useful, or it's of a certain, I leave it to what it relates to in my head, so it's not as useful. But yeah, I think, yeah, how do you collect choreography without these words, or how do you collect repeatable, you know, there's something that my dad spoke about that he wrote in when he was working in chemistry and drug research, and they had this journal, and it was called the Journal of Irreproducible Results. And I loved this idea and this term of irreproducible results. And I love the idea that what happens with our dance is irreproducible. Like, but of course we try to reproduce the bits that are a fascination, or for me, I try to collect the bits that need to be seen. It's like what has been seen cannot be unseen. Like, so I guess I'm still fascinated with that process of collecting, or how you, why is, yeah, those value systems, you know, like why is that more important than that? And then what you set up, like what sort of choreographic setup you make for those things to happen, whether they're right, left, head, circle, blah, 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 or whether they're, like, how can we not name them, but they can be reproduced to a point, you know? I think that really is kind of a fascination, ongoing fascination.
And maybe there's like a kind of like pure dance kind of like defined approach where it's like, I'm not naming because I'm not using language to define this, or I'm not notating because I'm relying on memory and the fallibility of memory to retain this. And yeah, I think that's quite exciting. And I mean, yeah,
like,
yeah,
what would that produce? Like, I don't know what that would bring into action. Like that.
Well, yeah, there's also
used. Oh, just
sorry.
No. Sorry. I was just talking. I was thinking of somebody who used the term byproduct. It might have been Jennifer Monson, but they wrote about the byproduct of the doing, or what I'd call the attempt, or, you know, what's the agenda for the attempt, and what are you attempting? And the attempt becomes the choreography is the attempt. And then the byproduct is what the physical outpouring is, and negotiation. Anyway, sorry, what were you going to say?
I was just going to say, I guess another way to look at it, though, it could be like meta advanced and sort of say, like, you know, writing is choreography or speaking is choreography or writing is dancing or speaking is dancing. Like, it's really just all about how you perceive it, I guess, and what's most useful for the work.
What do you want to attend to and how do you want to set up those focuses, like those states of attending to, or the multiplicity or the simultaneity fascinates me. So that's something also I sometimes think that you know, leaning into your desire or omitting that desire, like when do you like, I don't know, it's sort of interesting. There's a common interest in often wanting to get out of your usual practice or, you know, your usual habits. And there's often that desire to move on or to, but I remember thinking, what if we reiterate the problem or the, but then you end up in the same thing. And we often have the desire to not make the same thing or.
I think that's where I really look to, like, external structures for like scaffolding, like Sarah Aiken and I in a lot of our works, like we kind of, and I think I also do this in my solo projects, like, yeah, looking for kind of connections, like things that can kind of almost be stacked. You're like, oh, there's three people in this and there's three people in this, so there's three people yeah, and kind of like I'm losing my track a bit. What were you saying? I had a direction. I had one.
Oh gosh, I've lost it too. It might be question time.
Yeah, maybe it's question time.
Tom's just come in.
Why don't I jump in and see if that train of thought comes back a little bit later on. So to those watching, now's the time to pop your question, if you've got a burning question for Joe and Beck, into the chat. We'll start with one from Oliver Severiego, and his question's about failure and the role of failure in your work and practice. Does failure actively play a part in performing and creating, or is there a conscious attempt at failure sometimes? He also offers the idea that failure more an optional permission in the attempt. So maybe if we can just have a little chat about your approach to, or the role of failure within, call it process, practice, work making.
I feel like it's really project specific. Like there is a project called Sinkhole that I have with Jessica and Arnie Bing, and it's kind of designed to fail. It's sort of the whole premise of the thing. It's designed to collapse, and it's designed to create a situation in which people maybe aren't really sure what is going on. With the opportunity for multiple responses to like certain instructions. So in that sense, like, yeah, failure is like, it's almost the goal. So maybe it's not a failure actually at all. It's not a failure. Yeah, I feel like I don't have like a super clear answer to that. I think I always make room for failure to be okay. Like that's often what a lot of planning is for a work. Like, if not enough people come, which can be a real problem with like a lot of participatory works, you know, you need to have a backup plan, or you could allow that thing to spectacularly fail if it was conceptually relevant. But I mean, I find it interesting watching someone dance in that kind of space that might open up when there's a failure or a mistake, or and maybe that's just something to do with like liveness and tension. And
can I jump back in and just picking up on the conversation about naming of things, just to drop this in as well, is it do you find it useful to name something as failure? Is that helpful in the process? Is that
yeah,
as opposed to leaving it as a kind of ambiguous feeling? Or
it's interesting because Beck started off with, you know, it's project specific, and you know, I thought of, you know, Wasted that you made with Sarah at the Art Centre, and it's sort of like what you consider a failure, like, and it's really good to think about for me, because I think what would be a true failure in a performance situation or in making a work would probably be something quite extreme, you know, if someone got injured, you know, and the show couldn't go on, or in the middle of it, or something really collapsed. I think, yeah, like a sinkhole. But it's almost like it's extreme. So nothing for me is really that much of a failure. But I also think it's connected to shame. And I think vulnerability, and someone said once, oh, your work is like the theatre of vulnerability, you know, and that's your theatre. And I was sort of thinking, yeah, I do thrive in that place. I like that meeting of personal in a public space with people that you don't necessarily know are there with you, watching you, and you know, you want to try and take it to that place. So in some ways, yeah, it's your consideration of what is perceived as failure.
It's funny that I thought of failure as like a spectacular failure. I don't, like, I was actually just reflecting on when you finish a performance or something, or and you have that feeling and you're like, oh, just that failed, you know? And sometimes it's actually quite small, or it's like about flatness, or not being able to generate a kind of energy or
And it can go.
Performances are always
time.
So long, you can often like find a way to fail and not fail equally.
Yeah, that post failure of a show can be really something you can't shed easily. Like that can hang with you for a long time, that feeling.
We failed once. Sarah and I maybe failed once at Dark Mofo. We were supposed to put a lot of people to sleep on these, like, these mats that they said they'd provide us, and they didn't provide enough mats, and everybody was drinking beer, and the whole thing got pushed forward to 1 a.m. instead of 5 a.m. So everyone had just, you know, taken some pingers, and they were ready to go, and we were like, now you're going to go to sleep, and we actually got booed. But, like, I'm really happy that we failed at that. Like, it was a really memorable moment. People told us we were boring. They yelled it out.
maybe let's lift away from failure to I don't know, something more sustaining. I just wanted to have a get your thoughts on this idea of call it what you will, practice, process, art making, and the sense of its journey over a long period of time. So not during one project or not during a short period of time, but over the span of your interest in it. So there are just some words that have jumped out of the conversation tonight for me, but also out of various bits and pieces of, you know, copy that for works that you've made and those kind of things. So I wonder if I can just throw some words into the space and see what comes out of it, in the sense of what holds your interest in what it is that you do. So some words: desire, responsibility, contribution, the in-between spaces, tension, and slipperiness.
Pause.
just write them down. Yeah, in terms of responsibility, I think a big desire of deep sea dancers, and I think it might have failed a little bit, but I don't know if it failed spectacularly. but was to create a situation where responsibility is shared at all times, almost to the point where you feel kind of compromised, maybe, because you are always, I mean, we're always in relation to each other anyway in performance, but the piece was kind of designed in a way in which, like, you kind of couldn't move forward through it if you didn't have certain information which had to be collected through some interaction with someone. I like that situation where you're in it, you're moving in a way that you wouldn't usually be, because someone is creating that movement with you, or you're not sure who's leading, or you're not sure who's, the power dynamics are shifting or unknown. I think there's always power dynamics there, but there's, I guess that piece was an attempt to flatten them somehow, even though that was not happening because I was also kind of in charge of the thing.
Maybe I'll go towards desire and responsibility. I think making the work Confusion for Three from around 2013 to 2015, and then coming back to it in 2018, I had this sense of abandoning responsibility. So it was quite it was quite a shift in the way I worked on it with Beck and Sian Law. And I think what I was learning was this thing of people's desires that saw the work and that would say, oh, I just wanted this to happen, or oh, I wanted to get up and join in. And from that point on, I started to think, I've got to make these choices to set the work up, but the choices are happening during the performance from the three of us. But then I realized that not fulfilling their desires was a great place to be, like to make a work that would stir desire. And so I've sort of tried to keep working with that idea of stirring desire, like complementary relationship with the audience in terms of your desire and their desire being met and stirring it. Because, you know, it doesn't have to be fulfilled. The stirring is quite an interesting place to create. Yeah.
It's funny, in Confusion, I felt so aware of your desires within that work. And I do feel like I was consciously trying to not fulfill them a lot, like as a kind of role or agenda for myself in that situation, which I'm sure you knew, but.
Well, that's why I love doing it, because both you and Sian would be finding your own logic, you know. You found your own logic and you took the opportunity into your hands, so that, and it worked, you know. I couldn't have made it because it was your engagement in it, so I wasn't really fully making it. It was a proposition. That's something I really am fascinated by with that piece,
and it produces such a tension. Another word that Tom brought up there.
Another word. I think we had no idea really what our intention was, which was also that thing of omitting certain things. A lot was omitted, and a lot was in there. So maybe that balanced or something. I'm not sure.
Yeah, there's something else. I mean, I know I'm aware of time, but in between spaces also like really resonates with me. And I was, yesterday Joe and I were talking, and
I kind of was like, wow, have I ever, like, when do I actually work with like dance, like the materiality of like bodies, or like this kind of dancely logic that I kind of speak about, and it's even in my bio, like I often feel like I don't actually work through that on my body. It's something I'm super interested in doing, but I've maybe been a bit scared to do, or I feel like perhaps that's fulfilled elsewhere, like in your work, Joe, or and yeah, something about taking all of these logics, practices, and also applying them kind of to other mediums, or disciplines, or yeah, kind of utilizing everything, but with this kind of like dancely logic that has been created through dancing and being a dancer. But yeah, something about that. And then also something just about the in-between spaces between bodies, and how those spaces are, it's kind of where the work is in so many ways. Like I feel, yeah, those spaces are so specific. It's, and it really, yeah, your body is an archive. And like, I think it, I feel like I carry a lot of dormant physicalities that have come through these relationships, and they're sort of revitalized when I'm like dancing near a certain person, or and they cannot be found in other situations. Like I think yeah, there's certain people I dance with that I cannot dance that way anywhere else. Like I must be with those people. But like yeah, that's it's really magic.
And maybe it's also, you know, that thing of our you know, our lives and how dance appears in our lives, and looking at other cultures and how dance appears in their lives, and different engagements and roles it plays, or how it's infused in your, you know, coming into the world. And you know, it's quite distinct in, you know, for us. And I don't know, it'd be interesting if that shifted, you know, like that sort of, you know, categorization of being, yeah, how it is in, yeah, the logic in that. I don't know. I think I've said enough about that. Yeah.
Feels like a proposition to finish with. It feels apt. So thanks all for joining us tonight. Thanks first of all to Joe and Beck. For the last hour, for your thoughtfulness and insights. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you, Tom and Lucy Guerin. And yeah, thanks for chatting, Beck, and having a chat.
Yeah, so much to say.
Yeah, there's a lot of value in discussion. And I think this year has reminded us that we haven't had those accidental crosses of, you know, paths, to have those little in-between chats after a show or after class or before, or, you know, and they're really valuable in what we all do, and I appreciate them with, you know, with Beck and many people.
Thanks both. So thanks to everyone for joining us for this Dance Dialogues event. We hope you enjoyed the conversation, and if you did, hope you'll be keen to join us again for our next conversation. More will be announced on that shortly, and the best place to hear about it is via our socials. So that's all from us this evening. Thanks again for joining us, and see you all again soon.